From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
Oh, I'm Jack. I'm sorry.
And welcome to the show. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing great.
We have a special guest with us today, and I use the plural guests. We have the wonderful Stephen and Stephen from Lost the Musical on the show today. Very excited. Welcome, Stephen and Stephen.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're happy to be here, guys.
Now, something that's interesting in the radio world is, you know, how do you differentiate? You differentiate by the voice. But we have two Stevens, so it's going to be a little bit difficult, but
well,
I guess,
helps,
how would you prefer to do that?
If it helps, I can talk like Eeyore. That's usually a safe bet.
And oh, guys.
I have my quasi-Australian, quasi-American accent, so you can tell the difference. We've got Stephen Brandon. That's me originally. Originally from Sydney, so I've flown Sydney to LAX many times, but luckily I fly Qantas. And then Stephen Parker is Eeyore.
Yeah, I'm Eeyore. I'm the sad, grumpy one. He's the upbeat Australian one.
Perfect. So really exciting stuff, guys. I mean, this is, Lost Musical is something that is really kind of become very popular. And you know, we met at Comic-Con this year. You talked about it, with us there and with the other fans there, and it seems such a great idea. And just, it's definitely the Lost community has kind of wrapped itself around, this musical. I mean, what have you guys thought about everything from, you know, where you started to where it is now?
It's amazing that we are almost towards the end. You know, we did a 6-week run, we've done 4 weeks. It's just grown and grown. It's been so fantastic meeting everyone from the community and people coming to watch the show, and everyone leaves the show going, oh, I have to watch Lost again. Oh, I forgot about this part, I missed that part. And tell a lot of people, a lot of our friends haven't always seen Lost, but they enjoy the show. But there's certain levels of humor. Mm-hmm. And you can tell very early on what kind of crowd it is based on whether they laugh at certain jokes or not. Let's just
most
say
Most people get the sexual innuendos and like the overly like obvious jokes. And then there's another level, which is just the Lost jokes, which is just the subtle references, the making fun of the show, the what we didn't like about it, characters that run in and say one line and then immediately die. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, when we kill off Paolo and Nikki in a different way to the TV show, and people register how we've done it and who they are at the time, uh-huh. Then we know we got some Losties in the crowd. And you know, we're selling Dharma water and we've got Dharma chocolate, and people are coming in their own Dharma jumpsuits, and you know,
it sounds like an absolute blast.
It's just so much fun singing along and seeing the characters every night. And just because Charlie dies on a Thursday night doesn't mean he's not coming back on a Friday night.
Is it all like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, where people got in costumes and sing? And
well, eventually it could become that way, because people don't. Well, people know the tunes, but they don't know the songs, because we don't have original music. We have parody music. You know, we're doing "Don't Stop Believing," "American Pie,"
"Start the Fire,"
and then "I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General" becomes "I Am the Very Model of a Dharma Barracks Employee," and Sawyer sings about how he became Lafleur and talks about that in a whole song. So it's taking a while for people to learn all the lyrics, because there's so many lyrics per song, because there's so much to explain. But, you know, by now, a lot of our regulars can sing the opening number. Bye, bye, Oceanic K15, from down under, when asunder, when we fly from the sky. Of course, 1,000 miles, because the radio died, singing.
We're looking
for us in the wrong place. Looking for us in the wrong place. Etc. Etc.
Well, you guys need longer than 6 weeks, because you guys premiered it. Opening night was on the 10th anniversary of Lost, correct?
Yeah,
yes.
we had a big opening gala night on September 22nd, 2014, and we had a great Lost alumni turnout. We had MC Gainey, and we had Sam Anderson. We had
Andre
Kimberly
Gabriel.
Yep.
Nadia came,
oh,
and Kimberly
yeah,
Joseph. Cindy, the flight attendant, was there.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, we had Jorge Garcia visited us, and Rebecca Maida.
That's awesome. Is that surreal for you guys to put something like this together and have casts from the show?
I felt oddly strange handing a ticket to Lost the Musical to Rebecca Mader. I don't get starstruck ever, but I nerded out like a 12-year-old boy. It was ridiculous.
And just watching Jorge sitting in the front row, and he was actually coincidentally wearing a gray t-shirt. Now, Al Hurley wears a gray t-shirt through the entire length of the show. And just to see him watching himself was just bizarre and fantastic.
That's trippy. That is trippy. and for those who don't know, maybe at home that are in the LA area or even visiting, you guys have a couple weeks left, and it's at the Lillian Theater in Hollywood.
Yes, we're at the corner of Santa Monica Boulevard and Vine Street. It's like a little theater row. There's a lot of fringe festival shows there, and we are on Thursday to Sunday for the next 2 weeks. So there's 8 shows left. Unfortunately, we're already sold out both Saturdays. But if you are in the neighborhood, come down and visit us. And you're going to get to see all 6 seasons of your favorite show condensed into a 2-hour musical, relive the greats. And, you know, we've got 16 cast members and they play over 60 characters. The good news is for this cast is if your character dies, you get to come back as someone else.
Yeah. If you want to come to Lillian, make sure you bring a guitar case and tell them Jacob sent you. We'll give you a special discount. So
yeah.
And people can follow on Twitter at Lost the Musical. Also check out your website at lostthemusical.com. So it's interesting, something like a Lost parody musical. Great idea, great concept. But it's interesting, like, you guys came up with this, you know, 4 years after the show ended. What brought about the inspiration to kind of come up with something like this?
Well, I always believe wholeheartedly in my gut, and I know I've been proven wrong about this over and over again, that I am the world's biggest Lost fan. I've been proven wrong. There are bigger than me, but I was sitting in a Denny's one morning with Stephen Brandon, and I had been thinking about Lost the Musical for like a month, and I'm like, this is crazy. No one would ever want to do this. This is a ridiculous concept. And I went up to Stephen Brandon and said, hey, I kind of want to make Lost the Musical. And he immediately turned to me and went, oh my God, we have to make this happen. So literally we just started writing the book and the songs, and we just started laughing and doing ridiculous things with the scenes and flipping them on their heads and bringing in characters. And then before we knew it, we were casting, and it kind of overtook us before we really knew what we were getting into. And then before we knew it, we were up on premiere night and people were clapping and laughing. And I was like, where did my last 6 months go? I don't know what just happened.
I think the original plan was to just take up time because it's such a big production. And no, because Stephen told me this in early June.
It was late May, early June.
Wow, what a turnaround.
And I was like, well, we'll do it in March. We'll do it in like April, March next year. But then it hit me, September 22 is the 10-year anniversary. We have to build it up to that date. So we got to get this thing happening quick. So we wrote it together in a month, just sending scenes and songs back and forth every day. July 2nd, we had our own personal table read with a group of friends. We took a few songs out of it. We added an extra song in. And then we had some preliminary auditions in July. We already like came to Comic-Con prepped. We started our Kickstarter the day Comic-Con started, around that a month. And then, yeah, we got back and we finalized our cast early August. And then we rehearsed 3 days a week for 6 weeks. And then we're in the theater in the middle of September. And bing, bang, boom, we made it happen.
Wow. That's incredible. I didn't realize it was that quick, you know, because we met you guys at Comic-Con in, late July. Yeah. And really, you only had it in full force, since May? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
we only had a final script for a few weeks when we met you guys.
Wow.
Yeah. The good news is that we already had the show in place. We knew what we were doing. We basically took the timeline that we found in Lostpedia and decided we want this. We don't need this. Should we bother doing much with the temple from season 6? Nah, we hate the temple.
Nah, we're just gonna do it on one speech. Like,
yeah, we'll skip over the temple. You know, and we'll just, you know, condense that, and then we don't need to necessarily see Desmond telling Charlie 1,000 times he's going to die. We'll just say he's had premonitions, and then we'll see what happens after that. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we reduce, and how are we going to explain what happens off the island in season 4? Yep. I know. We'll just do it in a 6-minute song. We'll just do 3 years during Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, all of season 4 basically takes place in an 8-minute song. So
that's an interesting thing you bring up, though, in terms of being a fan of Lost, and I think all fans of Lost, no matter how hardcore of a fan you are, there's parts of Lost that you could kind of do without, right? We could cut out Stranger in a Strange Land, Nikki and Paolo, pretty easily. So was it fun being able to kind of cut out some of the stuff, or maybe condense some of the things you think maybe dragged on or just didn't like?
I think that's where a lot of the humor of the show gets derivative, because a lot of anybody who's seen Lost, a lot of the common disliked areas are the plot lines that never got explained, the loose ends, the things we went on, the journeys that didn't really go anywhere, that kind of left us back to square one. So we make fun of all that. Like we make joke how the temple was a lot for nothing, and it was built up over many years, and then we got it. We're like, eh. We make fun of characters that got off the show for some DUIs and such. We
the fact that you know, Jacob shows up as the protector of the island, and we don't see him until season 5, which is like, you know, the end of the second act of our show. It's like, you're the protector of the island, and we're just meeting you now. Where have you been the last 5 seasons? You know, the answer is they hadn't written your character yet or cast you yet as Mark Pellegrino. But, you know, it just makes no sense. So we get to make fun of all of that.
How's in terms of, you know, kind of getting to poke fun a little bit at some of the maybe the opportunities of the show as a whole. Do you see some people kind of ticked off by that? Maybe some people that felt it was good? Or is everybody kind of, all the Lost fans get a good laugh out of it?
We haven't experienced any ticked offness. Most people think it's hilarious, because a lot of people, even if they loved a part, they see what we're doing and they kind of appreciate the jabs. I don't know. Like, for example, Walt. Walt is a very prominent character in the first 2 seasons. He's a huge part. He had a building storyline. But we make fun that he has to go through puberty and get kicked off the island real quick. And we didn't want to hire an actor just for like the 3 scenes we have him in. So we have Walt played by a puppet.
that's funny.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Literally the same guy who plays Lapidus plays the voice of Walt the puppets.
Also, someone came and was reading our program and was like, this actor plays Vincent, but he's the dog. I'm like, yes, we have Vincent dog. Yes, we have a polar bear. Of course, we have a smoke monster. We have everyone.
Now, I guess, you know, that's probably a bit of necessity to be able to play multiple parts like that, especially if you had to make this entire production in, what, under 6 months and really have it ready to go. Now, does that almost free you in some ways to be able to do some stuff that you wouldn't be able to do if you had that fully cast filled, or you know, does it limit you a little bit? And if you did it again, would you like to have a more, even more expansive cast now that the show has been so successful?
I got to say, you know, we have 16 cast members, and we have a, you know, it's a 99-seat theater. There's no room backstage for any more. We don't have a stage crew because we can't fit them. The cast is the stage crew. The cast is the ones who brings the set on and off. But it's fun. You know, we have an actor, Alex Lewis, and he's fantastic. And he dies 7 times in the show.
Wow.
You know,
awesome. And Kaylee Metz, and she plays Rousseau, and she dies 6 times. She plays basically every female character that blows up or gets shot.
Alex is Charlie, and then he's Faraday. He also plays his own father. He plays Widmore. He plays Paolo. He doesn't last very long in the show. He's one of Kimi's men. He's Captain Galt. We all know what happens to him. And
then he's
he's the big J.
What in terms of do people get complexes for being killed 7 times in a show, or?
I think it's more of a badge of honor. Like, okay. I'm very proud to say I get died the most times in the show. It's a very prideful thing.
As an actor, he gets to play different roles. He gets to wear different wigs, just in different costumes. Whereas other characters like Ryan Grassmyer, who plays Hurley, he's very happy that he doesn't have to play any other characters, and he gets to stay in his one T-shirt and one pair of shorts the whole show and doesn't have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen to you guys talk about all those people dying. I forgot how many people died on that show.
Oh, yeah. We have 62 characters. Is it 62, Stephen?
We had a few more, but we cut a few at a time. So long, yeah. Rudzinski. Rudzinski was in the first cut of the show, but he didn't make the final cut.
So we have 60 characters,
man.
And I think all but 5 die.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. That's incredible. It almost the people that complain about Game of Thrones puts it a little bit more into perspective, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, in terms
maybe not as gory though on Lost.
Not quite as gory. You know, this show has definitely become a success. What is besides that? What has been kind of maybe what's the biggest surprise you've had so far? I mean, you've had cast and crew come up, so I'm sure that was a big surprise. But maybe something you didn't expect to happen and has happened. And it was a great surprise for you guys.
I would say Cancer Gets Lost coming to the show and bringing 11 people, and it was just Cancer Gets Lost came last Sunday, and it was such I wasn't expecting it to be as a beautiful event as it was. I was thinking just they'll come, it'll be a great support, great audience, but they were so overwhelmingly supportive and so moved at what we had done for like to Lost, and they were so, it was just, I don't think I can explain it in words, but they were such a supportive force. I forgot for a minute that, because when you're wrapped up in a musical, you're looking for the beats, you're doing the sound cues, you're making sure lights come on, you get caught up in the mechanics of it all. And I really stopped and went, wow, holy crap, we built Lost the Musical. And I kind of got overwhelmed with some emotion I'm not familiar with as my crummy Eeyore self. So
we're giving 5% of our ticket sales to Cancer Gets Lost.
Oh,
and,
that's fantastic.
That's nice.
They came like it was Disneyland to them. Like, we created a Lost World, and you know, I gave them backstage tour, and I look, take a photo with Walt the Puppet, and you know, we're bringing back to, you know, Lost as we know it finished 4 years ago, and it's never coming back, but we kind of brought it back just for one night for them, and to revisit again, even though it's not Matthew Fox and it's not Josh Holloway, it's good enough for what we have, you know. And the, you know, we brought the characters back to life, and to see them live and in person and then meet the actors who played them, that's to bring back that feeling to Lost fans is fantastic.
That's great. That's great. Absolutely. And that's in terms of, even for us, we do a Lost panel every year at Comic-Con. We start up this podcast again. And even, you know, because we were in the thick of it, even, you know, and a lot of our, you know, podcasting friends and Joe and so many people during the run of the show, that now the show's over, it blows my mind that even 4 years later, that people, including us, are still so passionate about it and talk about the show so easily and so effortlessly, like it was when it was still on the air. And it's incredible that there's still that level of excitement around this TV show.
There is still, you know, you watch the episodes and you still pick up different things you didn't think before, and like, oh my God, so the palette dropped because of the chess game, because of this, and but why is it still dropping? Oh, the special fit. It's, you still think of questions that still can be answered every time you rewatch the show.
I recently watched the series, and I realized, like, you discover new things over and over again. Like, I realized that Juliet is the reason Juliet goes to the island in the first place, because she causes the incident, which then causes the babies not to be born, which then causes her to go to the island. So, it's just stuff like that.
Lost. That's some Back to the Future time.
Yeah, it's such a multi-layered show, and there's really not been another contender to fill its place. There hasn't been a show since Lost that has been that iconic and that multi-layered and that beautifully character-driven that has come and taken the throne. I mean, so I think a lot of Lost fans are still craving that feeling of tuning in every week and legitimately not knowing what's going to happen and not knowing if your character was going to survive and really caring about the events that unfolded, you know?
Absolutely. I agree with that, because we have people all the time. You think this show will be the next Lost? You think this show, because it was the best show. We podcast about different shows, even Breaking Bad, but Lost was by far the best show to podcast about. It was easy. I mean, as far as having something to talk about each week, and everyone, because you have the, like you said about the Lost fans, they go, they just want that next show to be the next Lost. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
No, it's lightning in a bottle. I mean, maybe in 10 years, but I mean, it's just, it was the right actors, the right creative team, and the right timing to go on the air. It just won't happen again, you know?
I think Breaking Bad was fantastic in that it had its plot development, but there's only a limited amount of characters, and I think you care about the overall storyline more than you care about each individual character, but there's so many characters in Lost. There's so much backstory. And of course, Breaking Bad only had like 63 hours, and we had 120, so we had double the amount for Lost. There's just more questions to be answered, more to care about in Lost, even though, you know, Breaking Bad was still a perfect beginning, middle, end, and a story that was complete.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was an excellent show.
Different. It's a different type of, you have more of the style of Breaking Bad. This, to your point, Stephen, just the beginning, middle, and end, that complete story. Lost was different in the sense that, yes, it had a story, a beginning, middle, and end, but it was the journey, was the part and the characters and what happened to these characters that you fell in love with. Did they get redeemed? Did they die? You know, there was just so much in terms of following that journey, dissecting every clue as it went along. And being part of that community at the time, and even still that community now, and having those discussions about every little minute detail, and looking back, you know, there's definitely things we probably didn't need to spend too much time looking into, but still, there's no better ride, I think, that you can think of as far as viewing a TV show is concerned.
I think it's because it's a puzzle, and we're still putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't linear, because there's so much going back and forth. I mean, I've said this many times before I wrote Lost with Steven, I watched the show again chronologically. Mm. Have you guys downloaded chronologically Lost from the internet and seen
no,
it?
No, I've heard about it, but I have not watched it like that.
It's the whole show, but it's the very first episode is Jacob and the Man in Black. Second episode is Richard, and it just tells you everything in order. And it's a different experience because you're getting answers before you get questions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of how we had to write Lost the Musical, because we couldn't do as many flashbacks and things like that, because you can't change the set that much in a live show.
We do all the flashbacks in the first song. We basically tell everyone's stories right away so we can get right into the story. So
it's a smart way to do it, too.
Then as I was watching it, I remembered when I saw it the first time and just the revelations of, oh my God, that's right. Juliet and Sawyer got together and that only happened in that one episode. You only saw it that way. Oh, that's right. We never knew for an entire season who was in the coffin. So then, you know, you go back, like, I definitely next time I'm going to watch it, I'm going to watch it properly again in order, because there's different things you see and feel depending on which way you watch the show.
Yep.
Fantastic. So the show ends was October 26th.
Correct.
What's next? What's next for Lost the Musical?
We would love to do a reboot on April 8th, 2015 for 4A15. So
nice.
We're just looking to see if there's a venue or a place, or can we take it? I mean, I know Hawaiians would love to see the show. We'd love to go to New York. I mean, I'm getting Twitter tweets every day from England. Come to England. It all comes down to financing now.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you utilize Kickstarter or something like that to be able to fund a production, say, in New York, Hawaii, or even in London?
Kickstarter is a viable option, but I think for what we want to do with the show, for what we want to do next, Kickstarter wouldn't be the best option. What we really want is to get a producer, get a theater company, get a production company, and do it large and do it properly. We did this on a shoestring for the love. We pulled together favors. We got set designers to work for free. We just we used people who had likewise passion to make the show what it is. And we have a large budgeted production on a very small budget. We would like to do it properly and make sure the actors are paid what they deserve and the production team makes a lot of money, and we would like to do it with big expensive sets and like we make fun of our budget in the show throughout. Like, our donkey wheel is literally a piece of wood taped to a door. Like we want to do it big. So calling all producers who love Lost, we have a great product, you know. So,
and we're doing it for 100 audience members a night. If we can go into a theater that holds 500 or 1,000, we know we can fill it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, especially selling out the show. Do you think the success of the show will give you that, you know, that ability? I mean, especially the recognition and the awareness of the show now. I mean, I would think that it would start to gain some traction, hopefully.
I mean, nothing's certain in this business, but time will tell, so.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, exactly. If there's any producers out there listening right now, definitely look into the show. It's hit that chord with the Lost community in terms of, you're right, we're not done talking about the show. We're not ready to let go of the show. We might all have a bit of Jack's personality in us. We can't let go.
Wait. Okay, that Jack.
Not you, Jack okay. Shepherd. I apologize. Okay. But I think it's really a nice piece of media that now we can enjoy and look back on with fond memories and not be so angry about some things we didn't like. Maybe even poke fun of them and laugh about it a little bit. And
I don't know.
That's so great about it.
I'm going to tell you. Might be still angry.
No, MC Gainey, Mr. Friendly, came to see the show and he had such a ball. He said it was a fantastic show. And he said that Damon and Carlton need to come and watch the show because it's great therapy. They will laugh. They'll enjoy themselves. And then they'll, all the anger, all the hate, all the whatever sitting on Damon's shoulders will just float away and they'll be able to move on.
Well, that's the thing that frustrates me so much is I look at Damon and we've talked to him, you know, before and after a lot of the blow up from the whole Twitter things. And it's just a shame that that's, I think it's his memory of it, which is tainted to a certain degree just based upon just the anger, the sheer anger that I think people threw at him specifically, because I think he talked to those people more. Probably should have ignored him, but
he should have ignored the haters and listened to the people who loved it, because there are more people out there that loved it than hate it. But the people that hate it have the bigger voice.
Yep. Yeah. Hate will always sound louder on Twitter than kindness. So, mm-hmm.
But this musical is all about the love. It's all about the love for the show. And everyone says their face hurts from smiling and laughing so much. and the cast have such a great time, and the audience enjoy watching the cast have such a great time. So nothing but love from Lost the Musical.
And I think that's why it's been successful. So kudos to that. That's really, really cool. And again, it's just amazing that you guys started this the idea and putting it together in May and launched it in September.
So quick.
I mean, it's just fantastic. Fantastic. And you can tell only a passion project would be able to have that type of turnaround and success. So
exactly.
It's true. It's obvious that you guys love the show. And speaking of loving the show, the guests that we have on our special guest podcast, we're asking the same question to each of those guests. What is your top five favorite moments from the entire show of Lost? And now is that time. So we have two guests.
You will be graded on this, though. Yes, too.
Oh my God, a lot of pressure right now. So.
Do we go 5-1? Is there any order?
Hey, however you want it. If you want to go now, our last guest, Ralph from the Darmalars podcast, he didn't want it in any specific order. He just five favorite scenes. But if you have ranked them from least favorite to most favorite, you can do that as well. I will let you kind of do it as you want to. But I would say, I guess both of you would have to agree with how you want to do it. So you want to do 5-1?
Let's do 5-1, bud.
Yeah, I got 5-1 ready to go.
All right, and then we'll just alternate. Right. So Steven, you'll do 5, and then Steven, you'll do 5. And then
Steven, you start, Steven. How about you, Steven? I'm good.
All right. So number 5 for me is season 2 premiere. It's Make Your Own Kind of Music. It's just watching Desmond doing his morning routine. And then hearing the beeps and then hearing the tap, 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 and realizing after a whole season hiatus for us who watched it live that there's a man inside the hatch.
Yes.
Like we didn't, like we, like I watched the show on television live, no catching up for me, no watching on Hulu later. You know, I watched it 10 years ago and then I had that 3 months hiatus like everybody, what the hell's in this hatch? What the hell is in the hatch? And never once in my life did it cross my mind, there's a man in the hatch. And for it to be Desmond, and just to see that record turning and him doing his exercise and then the beeps beeping, it was like, what the hell was Carlton and Damon on during writer's camp to come up with a man in the hatch pressing a button to save the world? I thought that was amazing, that just to show that the opening of season 2 that there was a man inside the hatch. I thought that was great.
Absolutely. I mean, looking back on it that the finale of season 1 had so many people ticked off because they wanted to know what was in the hatch because there was so much build up to that.
We were all John Locke.
We were
obsessed. We had to get in that hatch.
I've done everything you've asked me to do. So why?
I mean,
what'd you do
we got to figure out the others and Walt got kidnapped. I thought that was great in the season 1 finale. But right, you know, they'd be promising us the hatch and they show us down the hatch and then that was the end.
Yep.
So,
I have Make Your Own Kind of Music stuck in my head now that you mentioned it.
But I mean, in terms of Jack and I's history of involved this show, it was that episode and Jack coming home from work because we had to tape it for him, and us talking about that episode all night long and all because there's so much. You're right. There's so much chalk into the even that opening scene that was dissected and screen grabs and all this kind of stuff, and we talked about it until like 3 a.m. And it was from that I was like, This is something we could podcast about. We could talk about this and talk.
What is he doing in that hatch? What's he doing?
So you're right. It is a fantastic open.
Steven, what's your number 5?
All right. My top number 5 is season 3 premiere scene where we first meet Juliet. Oh, so I guess, first meet Juliet. That's the first Juliet case, right? Where we see her in her burning her muffins and in her normal house. And then she turns on a nice music, washes her hands to the burn. And then the earthquake happens and she's in her book club and people are panicking. She runs outside. We see Ethan. We see Ben. And we realize it's the plane crashing. Literally, that's the most blow my mind moment of the series for me. Not the most, but one of the top three, where it really just took me for a loop and made me question everything I thought I knew about the show. So,
yeah, it's a great scene. Again, another one of those odd perspectives. You start somewhere that doesn't seem like it's anything greater than what it is, and then just pulls back, and you're like, oh my God, we're on the island. This is the plane just crashed. This is back. I mean, there's so much that's revealed there.
I mean, season 1.
If you thought Make Your Own Kind of Music was bad, how about Downtown?
Season 1 was basically, you know,
it's been replaced.
It's the front of the plane crew. Season 2 was the tailies.
Yeah.
And season 3 was the others to see it from their side.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't like that scene because it killed one of my theories, but that's okay.
What was the theory that it killed?
that, remember the plane crash was staged, and once we see the plane actually did crash, yeah, I said,
right. Oh, about that.
So it was okay.
Yeah. So speaking of the plane crashing, that comes into my number four, which is the season two finale when Desmond figures out that he crashed their plane. And we see the numbers and we see it executed and we realize what this electromagnetism is. And then we have that very weird coda where you've got those two guys sort of in the ice and they've realized that the electromagnetism has been turned off and they can locate Desmond and they call Penny. You know those two guys?
Yeah.
And one of them kind of eerily looked like Matthew Fox. And there was all this question on the internet, is it Matthew Fox playing a different guy? But I just think the revelation that it was... it wasn't just a random plane crash. It was Desmond who crashed their plane. That's one of my number four moment.
And it was definitely had that kind of like, what did they say? Like, I think I crashed your plane, brother.
Brother.
But yeah, no, that's it had that kind of chills in your back moment. So yeah, that's a great scene.
So my number four going right along might cause some controversy, and I might get a little flack for this. Spoiler alert, I'm going to spoil the ending of Lost. Anyone who's not seen the ending, turn away, turn off your computers right now. My number four is, ironically, Jack reuniting with Christian Shepherd in the church. That speech they give, I mean, the talk they have. And this one's really personal for me because my dad passed away suddenly, unexpectedly. And this scene really, really gets me every time I watch it because it is exactly what I would imagine meeting your dad in the afterlife would be like. It's cathartic. It's beautiful. It's sad. It's heartfelt. It's everything I think would legitimately be. I think they did it. I'm one of the very few pro ending of Lost people, and I will champion that. But yeah, I mean, they built up Jack and his dad the entire run, the entire series, from the first episode onward. It's Jack and his dad, Jack and his dad, and he never gets that payoff. And even this is one of the most overlooked payoffs ever. That Jack finally gets redemption with his father. I mean, I can't believe more people don't find that so beautiful and passionate. How six seasons of buildup, the longest buildup of the show, is finally paid off, and I like it. I like it a lot.
Honestly, that's a good point. Even, you know, I do enjoy the finale. I like the ending. But I've never thought of it from that perspective that you're right. That is one of the biggest payoffs of the show. And that, you know, in White Rabbit, we're introduced to the dynamic between Christian Shepherd and Jack and the kind of never fulfilled or reconciled relationship. The fact that that was kind of the closing one of the big closing moments of the show is very poetic. I think it's a great choice there. And a great
it is
thing
a great.
To bring up.
I agree because I just watched All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues before we started recording, and so you see that, you know, the animosity between the two. So yeah, it's a great pick. Never thought about it.
All right, I don't mind those church scenes, and I don't mind all the flash sideways. My problem was. The explanation of the flash sideways. I just wanted it to be another timeline. I wanted that life to go on. I wanted to see what was going on. I was just like,
I agree.
That's your explanation for the flash sideways? That's what bothered me. But nothing in the church bothered me.
What bothered me more, I didn't mind the plot line. What bothered me is that I was like, oh, it's purgatory. And like the first episode, I'm like, it has to be the afterlife. And then I was like, nah, I can't be. I'm wrong. I'm always wrong when I think I'm right. And then it was right. And I was like, oh, that was a little too easy to grasp, you know? So.
Well, yeah, it definitely had. And also, it's probably the most misinterpreted scenes in the history of the show because how many people. You know, that aren't really fans of the show. It's kind of, you know, on the verge. Maybe watch the first season. I said, oh, well, they're all dead in the end. They were dead the whole time. I was like, well, no, they weren't dead the whole time. They all eventually died, and then this is how they got back.
Yeah, it's so silly to me that people believe that because Christian Shepherd says it in plain English in that speech. He says, what you did on the island was all real. It was the most important thing you did in your life, and you all met each other here to go on together. He says it like plain as day.
Yep. But it's crazy that even though it's there plain as day, so many people, and again, they probably didn't watch the show, they probably didn't love the show, they just kind of, they heard it by hearsay and just kind of perpetuate the misconception. I go back, you know, not to bring up Damon again, but he did that interview with that one individual that said it straight to him, and Damon looked like he was ready to like cold clock him. but it's true, it's just weird how it's very clearly communicated that it's not that they were dead the whole time. It's just this is how they moved on after they all passed. but it's so misunderstood. But I would agree in terms of they kind of set it up, and that's, I think, why a lot of people felt it should be a separate timeline, because I felt the same way. Because in the previous season, you had, you know, the past, the present, interspersing between each other, going crazy. And then so it would make sense within the universe that they built for themselves that they would create a separate existing timeline or a separate universe that they exist within. But I guess Fringe would be the people that take advantage of that type of plot device.
Yeah, and it was interesting. It was like, all right, so Desmond doesn't have a wedding ring and Jack has a son. So that was a bit off, bit confusing. Yeah. But it was very nice watching the show to see everyone come back again. Oh, look, there's Ian Somerhalder again. Oh, look, there's Michelle Rodriguez again. And, oh, Charlie gets to witness Claire giving birth again. And we missed that. So it was, like, in terms of watching the show, it was nice to see everyone again.
It was definitely a love letter to the characters. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I like the Flash sideways.
Back on the show, yeah.
Yeah. Because we kill off so many characters, and coming, I feel like I'm a radio DJ. Coming in at number three, Steven's top three moments. Charlie dies in the season three finale. He's inside the underwater looking glass hatch. He closes the door. There's Mikhail. He's up again for the third time. He throws the grenade. It's not Penny's boat. Charlie floats. Oh my God, it all happened. It came true. Like, were they really going to kill Charlie? Yes, they did it.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, I that one was still so, because even the previous episode, you think he's gonna die then, you know, there's no way he's gonna be able to hold his breath and get up through the, and he does, and it's that breath of air that he takes, you're so relieved. I think it's such a good parallel to the audience at home, because we could take that breath of fresh air and like, oh my God, okay, Charlie's not gonna die. And then the next episode, he dies, and it's so traumatic, because we did feel, we thought he was going to die earlier, he didn't, and then he ended up dying anyway. So it was almost the double-edged sword there for us.
And he was the hero, and he, you know, he let the people contact the freighter, even though it turns out the freighter was full of bad people. you
Not
know,
Penny's boat.
He was the hero, and we have a whole song tribute to that in Lost the Musical.
Yep, we do Don't Stop Believin', Don't Stop Bereavin'.
Yes. Hold on to your breath, Charlie.
Coming in at number three. Sorry, now this is contagious. I can't stop doing that now. my third is Rose's and Bernard's first flashback episode, where we find out Rose has cancer, and she and Bernard desperately tries to save her. And then the epitome of where they realize that, or Bernard realizes rather, that he can't leave the island because his wife would die. And it's I think it's a beautiful episode of acceptance and grieving and doing what you can for the people you love. So I don't know. Rose and Bernard always got me, because they're just the perfect married couple. So.
Well, and that episode had a pretty, I think, poignant moment to me in just explaining what the island was, because there was it the shaman or the healer that was there in Australia, I believe they're at, right?
Yep.
And he was talking about how there's these pockets of, magnetivity or whatever you want to call it, that have these healing properties. So I think, you know, that was just one of those explanations to what the island was. It was another one of those special, you know, locations on the earth that has certain properties that can heal people.
For me, it was the first time I fell in love with Bernard as a human being character, because he does that scene where he proposes to Rose, and he has the quartet, and he said, and before he can say it, she says, "Bernard, I'm dying." And she explains the whole thing, and we see his reaction, and the quartet kind of shrinks off, and there's a really big moment of silence, and he goes, "You haven't answered my question."
Aww.
My only problem with it killed another theory.
I apologize in advance. All mine are sappy.
Yeah, that episode killed another one of my theories. So,
and you can see that Jack really only cares about his theories. It's very
it's all about
selfish
me. So,
Jack, stop trying to fix your theories. I have to fix you. Now, we had warning that Charlie was going to die, because Desmond told us every week. But the one death that really got me that I didn't know was coming. Was Juliet falling down the hole in the incident. That was sad, because, you know, I felt that love between Sawyer and Juliet. Mm-hmm. And they'd spent all season trying to get to the incident area, back to the Swan. And we all knew that they had to reset the timeline. And for that hole to cost Juliet's life, and she was so close to getting off the island, I wanted to see her reunite with her sister. To lose Elizabeth Mitchell, that was hard for me, and that was a big moment.
It's such an emotional end to that scene of just her, you know, striking Jughead. It's just so, so, I don't know, just a very intense, intense episode.
Well, Josh Holloway was
Emotion. Just his expression, just emotion.
Because that's the first time Sawyer really experienced love.
Yeah.
First person he really, truly loved, and other than, his, I guess, his parents, but I don't know.
It was, well, yeah, his it was parents a sad are, scene. He stopped loving for, what, 28, 29 years because he was so devastated by his parents. So it was the first time he ever let himself out of that shell again. So
right.
And just in terms of the tragedy that made Sawyer who he is, finally being able to find love again, and it happened to him again, it's just so, you know, tragic and Shakespearean in a way. But yeah, just good, great, great call out. That's just a very emotional finale.
See, I can have emotions too, Stephen.
Uh-huh. Well, it's weird, though, that one Stephen prefers, you know, scenes people die and make you cry, and the other is, you know, more soft, sappy moments.
Well, going to that theory, my number two, Michael killing Cindy and Anna Lucia.
Okay.
It's Anna, honestly, for me, it was because everyone who's ever watched television is used to characters getting killed, characters dying. But usually it's just one per episode. Usually you get a big death and then it's over and everyone can breathe and talk about how exciting it was. And so Michael shoots Anna Lucia and I'm like, oh my God, crazy episode, amazing. And then Cindy walks in and he shoots her and I just was...
You're thinking of Libby, Steve.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's Libby. Crap. Ah, damn it. Ah,
right. It happens.
I'm forever shamed in the Lost community.
No, that's all right.
No, Libby. Sorry. Thank you for that. When Libby walks in with the blankets and gets killed, I mean... I never expected two characters to get killed off one bang a bang, and Lost had a history after that of doing that. They did that they did that with a lot of pivotal scenes with Saeed, and then immediately afterwards, Sun and Jin, and they did multiple character deaths in one episode for effect, and they did it very, very beautifully and very poetically and very just it gripped you. Like it was just a very good use of the multiple character death, you know.
Well, it was a shocking scene, too, because you didn't expect it.
Yeah, it was definitely a shock. It was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I was so happy I wasn't spoiled, but there were a lot of theories that Libby survived because she had the blankets. I remember all week.
Well, that's why she got to be alive the next week. Now, what do you know? What do you guys know, or what do you guys have conjecture about why they killed both of them? Do you believe the DUI theory?
Well, it was immediately. Like, it was immediate that... because it was well known before that episode that happened, and because that was during the season two hiatus. It was a long winter hiatus. I think it was during that. I think somewhere around there. So we didn't have much to talk about. So something that was definitely discussed. So it immediately became like kind of the storyline where they killed off, and it's hard to say that it wasn't somehow related to that because it's so kind of obvious that it was connected in some way.
But it was never confirmed. I don't think
it'll ever be confirmed. But it's hard to not, you know, give it some type of validity.
Yeah,
I believe Michelle Rodriguez didn't she serve 3 weeks in prison because of that sentence because of that conviction.
She had another one, didn't she? She had one before
that, and I believe like she wouldn't have been able to film like is she. Periodically, just because of legal battles, would not have had the time to do it. So,
but I Damon and Carlton in one interview said that Michelle Rodriguez only had a 1 year contract and they were going to kill her off, but no one liked her character, so they were happy that Anna Lucia died. So to actually have effect, they thought, well, we better kill Libby at the same time. That way it'll actually upset some people because by killing a character no one likes, everyone's going to cheer.
Mm-hmm.
But by killing a character who we don't know enough about and we actually do like... or like at least like the budding romance between Libby and Hurley, that would actually make you feel that gut punch that you wouldn't feel if it was just Anna Lucia. So Libby was a victim to that.
That's a great point. Because I think, you know, like you said, it was more the people were upset, more that they felt bad for Hurley.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, Libby's sad. We're sad Libby died, but oh, no, we love Hurley. And now he's finally found love, and now he's all alone again.
It's just him and his ranch dressing now.
Exactly.
All right, Steven, do you want a drum roll number one?
Drum roll. My favorite like moment, turning point, you know, whole episode is the very end of season three finale when Jack is there with his beard and he goes to the airport and we see Kate and we learn, and I predicted this from the moment that first I saw Jack with the beard in the episode finale, that we're doing flash forwards now and we're not doing flashbacks anymore. The time has changed. Season 4 onwards, flash forwards. I just thought that was such a brilliant way to shake up the show, to just, you know, to prove that they did get off the island. We had enough backstory. When we switched from back flashbacks to flash forwards, that was brilliant. That was my favorite.
So you actually had a feeling from the beginning, because I didn't really until close to the end of the episode have a feeling that it was something different. So you kind of felt like from the beginning it was a flash
I knew
forward?
Something big was coming. I hadn't read any spoilers, but I'd read enough interviews to know that something big is going to happen in this episode. Mm-hmm. And the episode starts as per normal, and we see Jack, and he's got a beard. And I went to my – it's just in my head. I remember watching going, I bet you any money this is a flash forward, and that's the big thing that's happening at the end.
Wow.
Kudos to that you. Beard. Yeah,
I had no clue.
Yeah, I called it in my head. I didn't say anything because I was watching it at a big party. And then at the end when Kate comes out and everyone went, oh, I was like, yeah, they did it. And then I got so excited about season 4 to start seeing these flash forward episodes.
Yeah, and it came at a perfect time too, because at that point, I think the flashbacks were kind of exhausted, you know.
Well, that's why
talking about a flashback around Hurley's hair, you know, just they lost the things to talk about.
Well, basically,
so
that they hadn't, by the time they did, I think it's 3.9, Stranger in a Strange Land, they hadn't struck their deal to end the show. Mm-hmm. And the minute they struck their deal and said, well, we're going to do 3 more seasons, we're going to do this many episodes, they went, we can finally start giving some answers. And we got that great Locke flashback.
Oh, yeah.
When his father pushed him out of the window, and then mm-hmm. we finally got the reason to why he was in a wheelchair. That was when the momentum started moving forward.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The minute they had that end date, that's when they went, all right, we're going to get 6 people off the island. We're going to call them the Oceanic Six. We're not going to let you know who they are. We're going to deal that out over a certain amount of episodes. And that's when they made the switch to flash forwards, once they knew when they had an end date. So that's turned everything around.
Absolutely. It is one of those behind the scenes things that became so pivotal to what the show became and how it was able to end the way they wanted to end it. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And the final number one.
my number one, I'm going to go back to season 1. It remained my favorite moment through the whole series. Walkabout, the entire Walkabout episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is by far, for me at least, not by far, by a slim margin, it is the best written episode for Locke.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It is the, like, you can watch every episode featuring Locke or Locke flashback, and this one epitomizes his character better than all of them combined. It's just, it is perfect. How they shot it, how they wrote it, how they intertwine the flashbacks with what was currently happening on the island. And then the big reveal to find out that Locke was in a wheelchair, and that moment of utter confusion where you as the audience couldn't understand what the hell you were watching. And then to see him wiggle his toes and be amazed at the wonder of the island. I watched it with my good friend for the first time when we saw it on television, and she just started crying, and it was
very emotional.
Such a pivotal it's such a beautiful contrast to the first 3 episodes, where it's all chaos and fear and panic and danger. And this is the first episode where we get that momentary break of just wonder and curiosity and just redemption. I really believe it's the first major redemption. Locke is the first person to go, I have hope. And that's when I got hooked on the series. Like, I liked the series until that point. When that point happened, I was like, I'm never missing an episode. So,
and it's definitely, it's, I feel the more we do these, Walkabout is going to be quite a few tops of the list that people are going to be doing, and for good reason. And I think you bring up a good point about that episode is, but the first 3 were very gloom. I mean, the previous one, they talked about, you know, euthanasia, essentially, should you kill somebody that's suffering. And then the first, you know, 2 are around, this monster is killing people, and we survived a horrible plane crash. And but the Walkabout showed the beauty in the chaos. And that's why I love in those scenes that they shot, where chaos surrounds Locke, but he is in his own world where he is able to walk again. And there's this to your point, this hope. And it's just, it hits that emotional chord, and the way they intersperse between him, you know, screaming, don't tell me what I can't do. You know, he wants to do this, and him going to the island and him moving his toes and standing up. It's so emotional, so beautiful. Awesome choice.
Thanks, bud. Couldn't have said it better myself.
So, this guys, Igor, fantastic list. Good job. Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I guess you both passed.
Oh, excellent.
All right. And then last but not least, you know, looking back on the show and the point of our retrospective podcast that we're doing is the legacy of Lost, you know, 10 years after the premiere, 4 years after the finale. What and you guys probably have a great pulse on this, especially with the Lost musical or Lost the musical. You know, what are your thoughts on Lost legacy on TV, on pop culture? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that this really brought about a new age revolution of serialized storytelling and allowing networks to go, you know what, we can do serialized shows, especially on cable. You know, Desperate Housewives started the same year as Lost on ABC. They were the two big hits. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was like, you can't do serialized. It's got to work well in repeats. It's got to be just CSI or NCIS, just, you know, Law and Order type stuff. But when Lost came along, it was like, you know, we don't have to have a serial, you know, standalone episodes. You can have a continuing plot and people will watch them. And, you know, that's why binge watching works so well now, mm-hmm. That we can have a serialized show. So I think it kind of was the first one really to sort of bring back serialized shows and start, you know, there was so many trends. After Lost, there was what was the one at the bottom of the sea? I want to say Fathom, but it's not Fathom. It had Lake Bell.
I don't remember that what it's called either.
You know, there was all these like, let's do serialized after, and they didn't do it as well as Lost, so they died. But yeah. Now, yeah. If you look at Breaking Bad, and Game of Thrones and everything like that, and Walking Dead and everything like that. And also, you know, it's 10 years after Lost, and liking television is a cool thing now. Comic-Con rules the world. Words are a key, and we're, you know, we're not being laughed at anymore. We're not just geeks with pocket squares. We, you know, a nerd or a geek is someone who has a passion for something, and Lost allowed that passion to be cool.
And on top of that, we live in a generation where Netflix exists, where people watch entire series in one day, entire seasons in one day. I think to add on to Steven's point, I know I just spent the first part of this interview talking about how nothing could ever fill the void of Lost. And I do believe that, but I think if there ever is going to be a show that can beat Lost, that can take the throne, that can do it, it's going to be a Netflix generation show. It's going to be a show that people get really hooked on, that they binge in one day or 2 days, that they can just get at their leisure. I think Netflix might be the best hope to get the next Lost. So,
do you think the only problem with that would be, though, you can watch it all at once?
I think
because I think part of the it was frustrating with Lost sometimes because you'd have they'd have two episodes off for 3 weeks, you know, the whole break they had, but it gave you so much time to just come up with different theories and just talk and just, you know, message boards. And
I think the opposite for, well, what I'll say for our generation, 100%, it was the going on the forums and trying to figure out stuff. But for this generation, the generation 10 years, my younger, they're the ones that they want to get it now. If you give this generation what they want at an affordable price and have it easily available, they will watch it. They'll pay even more. They won't. The evidence proves they won't steal it if it's easily available. So I think if you give a showrunner creative freedom to do what he wants and a platform like Netflix, you can get the next Lost. You just need to have those two elements: a viewing audience that's devoted and reliable. And a network like Netflix, that is willing to take a risk on a very talented showrunner, and you got it. So,
well, I think too, when you look at it, shows like Orange is the New Black or House of Cards. On Netflix that you can binge watch if you want to binge watch it. But it's your call. That's the beauty of this kind of post TV. Or post network TV style that streaming services like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu Plus have, in that you can binge watch it if you want to, or you can pace yourself if you want to, which then allows you to partake in the community how you see fit. For the people that want to just watch it straight through in one day, you can. Or if you want to pace yourself, listen to podcasts, read message boards, stuff like that, it's still available to you. Like, they still do podcasts about Orange is the New Black and House of Cards. It's a little bit different. But just like anything, when we started podcasting, there wasn't really podcasts about TV shows. And then, you know, now there's a billion podcasts about TV shows. If it became truly a Netflix model, it would mutate and form something new that I think would be able to still have that community surround something, but it'd be different. It wouldn't be the same as we did it.
But the go ahead.
No, you go first. I'll you.
The only problem I had, like, I like to binge watch, but sometimes I don't have time. Is like, if you go, you can't go on social media. I mean, when I was watching Orange Is the New Black, I said I have to go. I think I finished it in like 2 or 3 days. But I'd rather, you know, it's like, okay, I gotta just stay off because people, you know, Twitter and Facebook, everything, they're telling you what's going on. So you have to avoid. That's one drawback.
What I'm saying is, I think there's innovation there that could fill in that void so that you don't have the apprehension to participate in something like that.
Trust me, I like the binge watching. I'd much rather get it all at once and listen to it. But I just think Lost has had that. Maybe I'm just not ready to give up Lost as being that special show, I guess. Like, it just had everything, and it kept your mind going. When you had that long 9-month hiatus, you still had stuff to talk about because there was stuff that you didn't know. I think it was season 3 we had that 9 months after that. We have to go back. Was it nine months?
They also did a 6-episode beginning of season 3, and then we had a whole break. And right. then they started the 9 month when they just decided to do season 4, and they only had like 15 episodes in season 4. And they said, let's just going to run them with no commercial, no repeats. Yeah. It's going to run them all in a row. So they started January.
I'm old enough to remember Dallas and the cliffhanger, who shot JR, and people talked about that. There was no, you know, obviously no internet, no social media, but you would talk about it at school or wherever. People talked about that, but here it was, there were so many different things about what was, because I know when we talk about that scene, we have to go back. I didn't think I was going to like it when they came back for season 4. I don't think they're like, but I did end up liking it. But I don't know. I just don't think, I don't know. Maybe I'm just,
you're right, Jack. There's less to talk about when you binge because you just find out next week. Right. We had that week off, or 2 weeks off, or long hiatus to ponder and question and build up friendships and meet each other on message boards and listen to Damon and Carlton talking on their podcast about it. So it became much more of a communal, long-lasting experience.
Because I know with our emails kept coming even when Lost was off. People wanted to talk about it. We've done other shows, and once the show stopped, it stopped. I mean, the emails stop. But Lost, it was every day we'd get new emails. Mm. Now, obviously, if the show was on, we'd gotten a lot more, but it just was a year round.
And it's 10 years later, and we're still talking about it.
There you go.
Exactly.
And one other thing that Lost did, now, Stephen and I wrote this musical. We're both writers, but primarily Stephen's an actor, and I am a sitcom writer, you know, wanting to be a showrunner one day. And this show really brought showrunners to the front.
Oh, yeah.
Because had you ever seen a showrunner on a late night talk show? But when Damon and Carlton went on Jimmy Kimmel Live, it was like, well, these are the people behind the show. It's not just the cast members. And now the showrunners documentary is coming out this year. And everybody knows who Chuck Lorre and Jenji Cohen are. Yeah. And all the, you know, current, you know, what I want to say, Mike Royce and Phil Rosenthal and all the showrunners out there. You know, it's really putting the writing staff in front of the camera where it never was before.
Or, I mean, you have J.J. Abrams, you know. Really is now one of the top directors in Hollywood, period. The end, starting that out. But it's a great point that before, who cared? They were just names you saw at the end of the credits. But now they're just as much an integral part of that show as, you know, the lead actor.
It's a great point. JJ's his own brand. I mean, his own, like, you see JJ's name, you immediately go, oh my God, I got to see this. Whereas before, you see JJ and you go, well, what's it about? Who's the lead actor? Who's, you know, but yeah, it's a very good point.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was all about the actors back then. You go, yeah, who's the actor? Who's the actress? Who's in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the question always was like, well, why did you do this? And I was like, well, that's because it was written that way. And now the question is, well, who's writing it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at The Leftovers, right? We watched the show. Why did we watch the show? Not because of the ads. Like, oh, it's Damon's new show. I got to watch the show.
Yeah, you got to check out Damon's new show. Exactly.
But we actually podcast because Damon was doing it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So great point. Well, guys, it was an absolute blast getting to talk with you and talk about your amazing show and your favorite moments in Lost. What I love is kind of breaking those down with each individual, because nobody's is the same. And kind of seeing what was lost to you as a fan. And even just between the two of you, it you could see the differences in what you really loved about the show, which is fantastic. But as we close out, you know, what where can people find you? What's going on with the show? Where can they buy tickets? All that kind of stuff. Do you want to let us know?
So if you want to buy tickets, www.lostthemusical.com. We are, after the show finishes, it's 6-week run, we're going to put a DVD out for purchase for those people who didn't necessarily live in LA, couldn't get down to see the show. Those will be available in mid to late November. And you can also purchase those through lostmusical.com. Or if you have information or questions or you want to get in contact with us, you have some weird pondering lost question you need answered, lostthemusical@gmail.com, and we will answer you probably immediately. We're always on there. So.
And then so Twitter, we're at lostthemusical. And if you want to talk to us separately, I'm at stevenb29, S-T-E-V-E-N-B-2-9.
And I'm Stephen_C_Parker, and there's an at symbol at the beginning of that.
And it's a PH Stephen as well.
This is a long debate. I'm actually V on Twitter. I'm PH in real life. Go figure.
But your PH on Skype as well.
So in my
it's very
in my
confusing
legal
branding.
Life, my, in my legal life, well, here's why. When I joined the Screen Actors Guild, there was already a Stephen Parker with a PH, and that's my legal name. But in the community of actors and creative types, I'm V. I'm a V in everything acting-related. And legal, when I sign my name, I'm PH. So,
man, yeah, you can't share names, right? You have to have...
I could have gone down to the courthouse and changed it to a V and made it all legal, but I'm just too lazy.
Oh, man. Well, guys, thank you so much again for coming on and chatting with us. It's always a blast to talk Lost with fans, and it's great the success that you guys have had. Again, you know, talking with you at Comic-Con, you could see the passion that you have for the show, and it's you can tell that you care about the show a lot, and that's what has made it such a success and has sold out shows, and it's just a fantastic, fantastic story. And for those that haven't seen it, I wish I was in LA so I could go see it, but it's great that you're putting it on DVD so we can capture it and watch it outside of your show. So hopefully this is just the beginning. Hopefully it'll go on to much bigger and better things. If you're listening out there and you're a producer and you got some money, this is a great, great thing, and it's a great thing for our community. So kudos to you guys. That's fantastic.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having us.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you later. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Namaste.
Namaste.